Okay. So we don't know what we're calling this yet, but you two have a lot of perspective that I'll say me.
Don't touch
it. I need and want as a person in the community and as a person in the church. One of the things that I often run to you guys for help professionally is, hey, I saw this person on the street, or I'm working with this person, and just like, give me the download. What does this mean? Like, what's the code for this? Was this person high because they were doing this? I want to assume they were homeless, but I don't always know that. They had 7 backpacks with them.
That's usually a good indicator. Right?
Yeah. But I run it by you guys. So we're talking about homelessness.
So, hey, you got Kevin, Danielle, and Alvin here from, and we are the driving force between Hold Fast Podcast. I want to say thank you for taking time today and give us a listen. In our discussion and idea phase, Alvin came up with the idea of like, how can we better help people who are struggling with talking to those who are in need? How can we better help equip them with things to say? So I said, hey, that's a really great idea. Why don't you come up with some questions, Alvin, and interview us? And here we are today. So, yeah.
So I will say, Kevin and Danielle are here with me. Also, Fox is here.
Yes.
Good. Yeah. That was Fox. And Quinn is here also.
Podcast daycare. Here we go.
Here it is. This is real life, you guys.
It is.
So to set the scene before I just start asking you guys for questions and to share your story and your wisdom, as with every podcast and as with every conversation where things are being revealed of a personal nature, I'm going to be careful about being, I'm hopefully going to be careful about being sensitive in what I ask. And if you guys don't want to answer something, just don't do it. Say we'll move on.
Isn't that what editing's for?
That's what editing's for. I'm saying for the listener, because we're talking about this, I'm not just going to expect you to reveal everything.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't a fun, fantastic time of your lives.
Yeah.
I assume.
It helped mold and shape us into who we are today. And I think we're pretty awesome. So I think we're pretty awesome as parents. I think we're pretty awesome as a couple. And I think we're pretty awesome at helping people.
Yeah.
Danielle's hesitating.
Oh, I wish I was one of those people that didn't have to learn things the hard way, but here we are.
That always comes up. I feel like you guys... I feel like you guys think you might as well put this life to good use. All these perspectives that you've had to gain through firsthand experience.
Well, I could pretend like none of it happened, but I don't think that would benefit anybody. Mm-hmm. At least I can use it to help people.
Mm-hmm. So Danielle, while Kevin is fixing Fox's situation, maybe you can set the scene, describe a normal day or a normal night of when you were homeless.
So it would depend on when we were sleeping in our truck. We would scout out places to park that we wouldn't get hassled during the day. And sometimes that was a rest area. Sometimes that was a parking lot of a grocery store. Sometimes it was in the woods. Just depended on where we could find a car or find a spot to park our truck. And without our truck, it was a lot more difficult to find a place. So we're looking at like abandoned house porches to stay out of the rain, or there's a city park on Burlington Boulevard with a little bit of cover.
Things that you notice when you're looking for it.
Things that you notice when you're looking for somewhere just to get a little bit out of the cold or the elements. So.
And that doesn't go away. I still drive down the freeway and I'm like, wow, how come I never camped there?
Well, there's places where people congregate and camp and set up tents, but we tended to stay away from those kind of areas. Can be kind of dangerous at night. And
what do you mean dangerous at night? What are the risks specifically?
Of being robbed, of being taken advantage of worse. Everybody's desperate. Everybody's in survival. Everybody's looking to hustle and survive on their own. Mm-hmm. And so any way that they can do that, they will. It's better off by ourselves.
You know, the misconception about being homeless of like, oh, they just don't want to live under anybody's rules, or, you know, they're choosing to live this way, whatever. I think one of the things that people forget to realize is that being homeless is probably the most dangerous thing there is. You are an attractor of random violence because people think that nobody cares about you. Yeah. So
I forget the statistic, but it's something like you're like 10 times more likely to be a victim of random violence as a homeless person. Mm-hmm. I think that's being really conservative. I think it's much higher than that. But
yeah, in the past few years, there was an instance in Las Vegas where some guy was going up to homeless people on the streets and just hitting them in the head with a hammer as they slept, mm-hmm. to the point of where the police department had to put dummies out on the street and wait for the guy to come attack the dummies, and then that's how they finally caught him.
Oh my gosh, they set up a trap for him.
Yeah.
And he took it.
Yeah. Being homeless isn't a joke. Mm-hmm. You know, it's pretty scary. Because you never know when you interact with somebody if they're going to be there to actually help you or if they're just pretending to be nice so they can attack you.
Mm-hmm. So that explains some trepidation I've sensed from people, 7 backpacks sitting on the sidewalk, and no one has ever said in Mount Vernon, hey, can you help me out? But they've kind of glanced up and then glanced back down, hoping that I would approach them.
Well, no one's your friend when you're homeless.
Right.
And once in a while, you might find someone that can extend some kindness to you, mm-hmm. but it's not very often.
And even if they do, there's not a lot of, you don't just trust that person right away.
Oh, no.
Right.
Yeah. And Skagit County is strange for being homeless in. A lot of people are on the attack of people who are homeless. Mm-hmm. Like, not in my backyard, get out of here, leave. Mm-hmm. You see that a lot. There's not a lot of, hey, how can I help you? It's like, hey, how can I get rid of you?
Right. What would you, so you're finding places for the truck to park your truck or to stay overnight in the truck, or maybe both?
Both.
Okay. Both, yeah.
So what do you do when you're not doing that?
We slept under the picnic shelter at an RV park for a few nights, mm-hmm. one time. We stayed on a porch of an abandoned house for a few nights one time, and we slept under the cover of that tiny park by Les Schwab on Burlington Boulevard. We slept, like, once in a while we could scrape together enough money for a rat motel, mm-hmm. but that never lasted for more than a night or two.
Right.
For showers, we would, like, if we had the gas, we could make it all the way up to Ferndale. There's a truck stop called The Pilot, mm-hmm. and if you get there during the middle of the night hours when they're not busy, we can usually convince somebody to let us take a shower for free.
Okay.
Usually it's $12 for a shower.
I think when something we first really started crazy. Doing it, it was like,
oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, but $12, you can go pay for a shower, get a shower, and hide in their bathroom all night and be protected from the cold.
Yeah.
So
there's no time limit.
Once you're in the shower, there's no time limit. So we'd go in there and stay all night.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, that seems kind of worth it for $12. I thought when you said truck stop shower, I thought it'd be like $3 and quarters.
No.
You know, like a campground.
Yeah, no.
No, well, we've done that too. Right. We've pretty much been kicked out of every campground that there is around here.
Oh my gosh, of course. Yeah.
Because why would they want us to take showers there?
Oh boy. Okay.
That one park ranger, yeah.
So let's do a simulation. We're on the phone right now in this simulation to a person who's about to become homeless. They lost their job, they burned bridges, whatever. They're going to lose their rent. They have a truck. Give them some bullet points. Here's what to expect. Do this, don't do this.
Expect to be harassed.
Expect to be harassed. Mm-hmm. Expect to have the police called on you a lot.
Okay.
Expect to be treated like you're less than human, mm-hmm. a lot, especially if you haven't showered or if you don't have clean clothes. Like, doing laundry on the street is one of the hardest things to figure out how to do. Mm-hmm. Like, doing all of our clothes at a laundromat would cost hundreds of dollars.
Yeah.
It was more worth it for us to throw our clothes away and try and obtain clothes somehow, some other way, because it was just too hard and too expensive for us to do laundry.
Okay.
There are, I don't know if you've ever heard the term Kmart campground, mm-hmm. but there are businesses that allow RV parking overnight. So Lowe's was one of those. Mm-hmm. We used to park at Lowe's all the time, especially up in Bellingham. We go park at that one. There's also, it used to be that way for Walmarts too, where you could just basically go camp in a Walmart parking lot and not get harassed.
Is that that way anymore?
Not
at Walmart anymore.
I think as long as you stay low key and you're not blatant, they'll leave you alone.
You're not blatantly homeless.
We would put tarps up over our windows so that we had at least a little bit of privacy.
Yeah. You got to be careful in parks because, depending on the area, if it's a state park, city park, whatever, mm-hmm. Like one time I was sleeping in that shelter right there by Les Schwab, and I had an officer come up to me, wake me up and say, if you're not gone by tomorrow, I'm going to take you to jail because it's illegal to sleep in city parks. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I'm not even bothering anybody. I'm just asleep.
Right.
You know?
But it sounds like he knew that, but he gave you the buffer.
It's basically illegal to be homeless.
Right. No one wants to see that. We're not trying to do that.
It's bad for business.
Yeah.
It's bad for real estate prices.
Yeah.
It's inconvenient to other people. People's suffering is inconvenient mm-hmm. for everyone else.
What things should they do? This person who's about to become homeless.
Depending on whether or not they're clean and sober is whether or not they have access to a place to stay. Mm-hmm. It's all dependent on, as if people with addiction problems don't deserve a place to stay.
I mean, there are some places. There is the Friendship House, which is transitional housing.
But you must be clean and sober.
But you have to be clean and sober.
And there's a wait list there. So get on that right away.
Get on that right away. There's also the women's shelter in Anacortes, if it's a female that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Women and children.
Women and children. There's other organizations like if it's a family type dynamic, there's Family Promise. That a bunch of the churches in the area partner with.
Mm-hmm. All of these places you have to go to Community Action and get on a wait list for.
Mm-hmm. So go there first.
Yes.
It sounds like if you're going to be homeless, try not to be homeless. Like you're not giving any details about if you're on the streets, here's what you do. First, get in a wait list for a shelter.
Yeah. Do everything. Don't just sit there and wait for the clock to strike zero and boom, now you're homeless. You got
to
take steps.
And expect to find something at the last second because mm-hmm. it just won't happen. There's no emergency shelter here. Mm-hmm.
So there is less than half of a percent of vacancy rate in Skagit County for rentals. Mm-hmm. So basically there's zero rentals in Skagit County.
Right.
So even if you had the funds to move somewhere else, you're not going to find a place. I mean, when you do, I'm seeing them $1,600, $1,800, $2,200 a month for two bedrooms, depending on the area. And it's insane. Landlords are capitalizing on the fact that there is no vacancy and raising their rents. Mm-hmm. Four-bedroom house right across the street from us. When we moved in 4 years ago, the rent was $1,200.
Mm-hmm. For a four-bedroom house?
For a four-bedroom house.
That's incredible.
Now it's at $1,750. Right. They just rented it to somebody else again. And what I'm seeing is there's like five different people that are living in this house now because it's the only way that you can make that rent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like a college dorm over there right now because no one person can afford that place by themselves.
Let's shift gears. I met a group of people hanging out during the day under a bridge, had a bunch of backpacks with them, and got to chit-chatting with them. And they were all employed, but they couldn't afford housing. If you guys were there, or if I had called you before, I was like, hey, I'm about to talk to these guys. I don't know the deal. Tell me what to keep in mind. Do this, don't do this.
People like that are so used to being judged. I mean, they can see it coming from a mile away, or they can sense when someone's not being authentic, mm-hmm. authentically nice, you know, or when someone's making them like a mission project. Like that is an icky feeling.
Right.
And we've had it happen so many times, and you don't want to ever feel like you're work to somebody.
Okay.
That's just gross. Yeah. It feels gross and it makes you feel less than human.
And you guys sense that right
away.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's still people that I deal with in circles. Like, I'm a pastor now. There's still people that I deal with that still treat me like I'm work for them, like I'm just fresh off the streets or mm-hmm. something like that. And it's a dirty feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, like Keely was saying yesterday, being authentic with the people that are there under the bridge, just being real and being you, with no condemnation, nothing but love. I mean, because if you go in there with an attitude and treat them like crap, you're going to get it right back.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's okay if you're not there yet, because I think a lot of people aren't. So I think that if you're not one of those people that authentically cares about that demographic, then let it be.
Then don't talk to them.
Then don't let it. It doesn't have to be.
Right.
Your mission to do it because they'll sense your BS, you know?
Right. So how would, if the person approaching these people who are all employed but homeless has the sense that wanting to be authentic, wanting to be a human being to other human beings, what would most be helpful?
Just
knowing your local resources.
Okay.
I'll look
my wife, so she does. We did that.
So, and just try to, I mean, even though that they're employed, I know street kids that get a job and they don't want housing. They just want to stay on the street and stockpile their money.
Yeah.
Because being homeless just becomes a way of life.
Right.
So knowing your resources is key, and knowing if they're, don't force your opinion on them, like, oh, hey, you should go talk to these people, mm-hmm. but be like, hey, just in case you, don't know about this, and this is available. If you want more info, I can give it to you. Otherwise, mm-hmm. can I pray for you?
Right. Okay. Yeah. So that's leads to another question is, well, first, every person that I've talked to knows more than I do. Has known more than I do about what local resources there are, which makes sense.
Yeah.
They need to. What would you guys do that you're able to do that I'm not? Because I've seen you talk to people outside of Starbucks.
Mm-hmm.
And you've picked up cues that I didn't know were there.
Yeah.
And then you were able to coax out more information than I would have thought to ask. And then we got that person on the bus to...
Oh, yeah. I took her to the hospital.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think.
So I guess how do you guys flash your badge and say, I've been there, I know what I'm talking about, and I can be valuable and trustworthy to you?
I think a lot of the times when I deal with people on the streets, I have a really good barometer on whether or not they're clean and sober, mm-hmm. which I'm going to probably say about 95% of the time they're not.
Okay.
And so the lady that you're talking about at Starbucks, the way she was in and out of it, I could totally tell she was on her way down, and she was talking about, and the way she was talking about needing to go to the hospital to get some kind of mm-hmm. narcotic medication made it seem like she was a doctor chasing.
So
I picked up on that, and then I started the conversation of like, hey, well, you know, I'm clean and sober. I'm in recovery from IV meth use. This is how much time I have. I totally understand where you're at. How can I help you?
So you were saying I've been into this specific chemical balance right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
This
was like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And I am learning so much right now. And it's so tragic for you guys.
Well, I would have never noticed any of it, and I didn't notice any of it until it was me, out of like survival. I was looking for, you just learn to see mm-hmm. when someone's using, I guess. It just becomes second nature. Mm-hmm. It's like your sixth sense, you know? So, and that hasn't gone away for either one of us, we can tell.
When I run into people in scenarios like that, it's like, I don't care that they're high or that they're coming down or that mm-hmm. they're looking for their next fix. If they're in a position to where they're looking for their next fix and it's extremely prevalent in their actions, I'm not going to give them cash. I'll give them a ride. Mm-hmm. If I don't have my kids with me, mm-hmm. I'll talk to them. I'll give them my number. I'll be like, hey, come reach out. Or, not too long ago, what was it? We were at Walmart and I was mm-hmm. putting a shopping cart away. And as I put the shopping cart in, I look in this front seat of this car and I see this lady just all passed out over her front seats. And it was like one of those that I just stuck my head in the window and I was like, hey, how's it going? Like pulling out my phone, just in case I had to call 911 in case they weren't responsive, because obviously she was under something, and it took a little bit of rousing, and I got her aroused and woke up, and I'm like, what is going on? And I started talking to her, and I was like, you know, I'm a pastor. I'm in recovery. I come from your context. How can I help you? And she's like, I'm just trying to make it to the methadone clinic. And so I was encouraging her to stay on that path of recovery in the methadone clinic. And I got her out of her car, walking around and engaging with Danielle and I. And we were able to have her come over, and we prayed for her. And we prayed for her. We prayed for courage for her to continue pursuing the methadone clinic. Mm-hmm. We prayed to silence the voice of the accuser, mm-hmm. And just, it was all we could do. That's all she was ready for, right. You know.
But and she's our friend on Facebook now.
And she's our friend on Facebook now. But in that is that first step of trust. Like, hey, mm-hmm. hey, these people, they cared about me. They prayed for me. They didn't call the cops on me. They just mm-hmm. love me. And now they've reached out to me on Facebook. And so somewhere down the line, that seed will grow into something else. Like, we you hope. Know.
Yeah.
Eventually.
Yeah. And
because the enemy is at those people saying, no one cares about you. Mm-hmm. No one would notice if you died right here. No mm-hmm. one would notice if you never came home. And we just don't want people to believe that to be true because it's, at one point we believed it to be true of right. ourselves. I wouldn't say that we were suicidal, but we didn't care if we died.
Okay.
If it happened, it would have been fine.
Right.
So.
My gosh. So what I noticed about that story is you asked her what she needed mm-hmm. and you believed her.
Yeah.
That's something, because Keely said that yesterday at training. And right away, there were 9 layers of like, really?
Yeah.
Do you really believe them?
Yeah. Yeah,
it's
I
not,
do.
It's not my business to get down to the truth. You right. Know? That's okay. not my job.
Okay, right.
You know, it's not my job to call them out on their lie that they're, I mean, because they believe it.
Right. I'm not going to poke around.
They believe that's what they need right now.
Until I get the answer.
10 years from now when they're sober, they might say, yeah, that was dumb. Right. But that's not my job to point that out.
Okay.
And all it'll do will alienate her.
Right.
In the process of me pointing that out.
Which is know? The whole problem, right?
Yeah.
That just made me think of that one chick out in Custer when our dogs are in the truck. Which one? Oh. So that's
the best, right?
It's a really long rabbit trail. No, it ends,
no,
it,
don't talk about
it, it ends no. in a bad way, sort of, but yeah. So
we were able to reunite and hash it out in jail.
Oh, one of those stories. Okay.
We'll I did get an apology, though. It was
one
nice.
Of their, on one of their newsletters, the Rally's MailChimp. Can you tell us quick what methadone is?
It's a replacement for heroin. Kevin and I've never tried heroin, but we know that it's it's basically a synthetic heroin. It's a step down. It's controlled in doses through right. a clinic. The goal is to eventually wean them off. Mm-hmm. Like heroin on the street is no control. There's no idea how many micrograms are in it or what's in it. Mm-hmm. You know, so the idea is to get them onto a controlled dose. Of something.
Heroin is not regulated.
Absolutely.
No.
Not. But
methadone is.
Methadone is.
Okay.
And the idea is to get them to wean off of it because heroin withdrawal is miserable.
Right. I say right like I know, but sure.
I don't know for sure either. I've watched people go through the withdrawal a lot of times and it doesn't look like fun.
Right.
Area methadone clinics, for those who don't know. There is one in Anacortes called Digwalich. So you got
we
me.
We love them so much.
I love them. It's pretty amazing what they're doing out in Anacortes. And then there's also another one in Arlington.
Or Everett.
Or Everett. Those are the. So with Anacortes being so close to Whatcom County, we get a lot of Bellingham people down here coming to the methadone clinics. Mm-hmm. I think that the Swinomish tribe that runs the one in Anacortes is the only one that does a. Bus routes, so mm-hmm. they'll like actually go pick people up in Oak Harbor yeah. and bring them into Anacortes and dose them and then take them back home.
Because that's a daily dose of methadone.
It's a daily thing. So if somebody is arrested and they're part of the methadone clinic here in Skagit Valley, the clinic will come into the jail and give them their daily dose.
Only if they're already a part of the program, though.
Only if they're already a part of the program.
And it's not just the methadone. There's counseling.
There's mental health. There's drug and alcohol counseling. There's a Suboxone clinic, okay. a Vivitrol clinic, methadone clinic. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that, and they're expanding because the need is so great. Mm-hmm. So
okay, you said 90 to 95% of people that you encounter on the street are in active addiction.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that. What Keely said, what you guys are saying, what I'm picking up here is be kind, listen, be a human being, because we're not going to solve that individual problem.
Yeah.
And just know that it's not a choice. No one wants to be homeless and sticking a needle in their arm. It's not, I mean, it's a disease mm-hmm. process that takes us to that point. Mm-hmm. So
it's not our job to judge why they're there. It's our job to love them because they're there mm-hmm. and help them out. You know, and to look at it from a biblical model, I always think of the parable of the Good Samaritan. You know, you have the guy who gets robbed and beaten and left on the side of the road. You know, in today's society, that's a drug addiction, that's homelessness, that's all those things that can leave people out in the cold on the side of the road. You have the priest that walks by, that goes to the other side of the road, basically skirts around the problem to keep going. And I see that happen. I've had that happen to me with a church locally. I went to them for help, and they, instead of helping me, they walked me outside and said, please go to other organizations, or we contribute to other organizations. Mm-hmm. Please go see them.
Yeah.
And then you have the Levite coming the other way, which I see in a lot of ways is today's society saying, oh, you made a choice, so you deserve to be there, mm-hmm. not doing anything to help. And right. then you have people that were there or actually have love for people who are there that come along and play the role of Samaritan and try to help them out.
Mm-hmm. Even if it's $5 of gas or a cup of coffee or praying for somebody, giving out your phone number. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not very many people care
right.
when you're on the street.
Right. Is it, if I walk up to a person on the street with a box of leftovers from my dinner, is that rude? Is that insensitive? What we'll do, if we're leaving dinner, we have leftovers, and we see someone on the street, we'll say, hey, we have this. Do you want this?
Yeah.
That's okay?
Yeah. Yeah. Man, I used to eat out of dumpsters, bro. Okay. So like don't hand out something that you've already been chewing on.
Right.
That's kind of really derogatory. Right. But you know, if you got half of a sub sandwich left that you know you're not gonna eat, it's just gonna go to waste, offer right. it up.
I do find myself trying to convince them, like, this is good. I just add this. I didn't touch this. You can see where the cut is.
Yeah. Another thing that I'll do is like, I will be approached for money. Mm-hmm. Just be like, hey, I'm really hungry. Can you give me some money? And I'll be like, if you're hungry, I'll buy you some food.
Right.
That happened to me in Bellingham. I walked out of a tattoo shop and this guy comes up and he's like, I'm really hungry. I need some food. And I said, if you're hungry, I'll buy you some food. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, well, I'm not going to give you money, but if you're hungry, I'll buy you something to eat. Mm-hmm. And he goes, okay, buy me something to eat. And I walked right into the Mexican restaurant and said, order whatever you want.
Yeah.
Got him a meal, him and his friend
you
a meal.
Something.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
I've given away $20 knowing darn well it's going for drugs.
Yeah.
But I think.
Drugging. What are you going to do about it?
That's what they need. Yeah. That's what they want.
They're right getting then. Kindness from you.
Yeah.
And they're going to get drugs somehow anyway.
I know I'm getting duped, but sometimes yeah. I just don't care. Because I've been the one doing it before.
That's a different thing. I know people that care that they're being, that really care that they're being duped.
They're just trying to survive.
What are you going
to
do about it?
The best way they know how.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
I must have had 30 job interviews while I was on the streets. Mm-hmm. You think anybody's going to hire someone that's carrying everything they own on their back and yeah. hasn't had a shower in a week?
Yeah, no.
Probably not. I never got hired.
Yeah.
But I kept trying to get a job. I mean, I was trying. I just wasn't able to be sober. I wasn't in a place right. where I was able to do that. So.
Were you trying to get a job or were you trying to get money?
I was trying to get a job to get money.
Okay.
I mean, isn't that what we work for most of the time?
I guess
right?
when you were in the thick of it, and maybe you weren't.
What I was spending my money on was different than right. what most people spend
so
their money on.
So you weren't trying, you were homeless at that time.
Yeah.
You weren't trying to get income, to get housing, to get stable.
I mean, that was part of it.
That was part of it.
Yeah. I literally woke up from under a bridge and walked across the bridge to a job interview one time.
My gosh. How'd that go?
I didn't get the job.
Didn't get it. Yeah.
No. But even after I got sober, mm-hmm. I never got the job either. With criminal charges.
That's all bad. Oh, yeah. That's just that whole thing. That's a whole other podcast.
Yeah.
So I saw a lady outside of the... I'm going to give you very specific scenarios. And you tell me what I'm missing. So I saw a lady outside the post office. She was sitting there with her head slumped between her knees. It was outside of work, so I saw her for hours and hours and hours, going to get mail, going to see people. So I asked her, I said, enough was enough. I'm going to go talk to her. So I said, I'm going to go get lunch. I can get you a burrito. Would you like one? And she was like, sure. Kind of casual like that. So I said, okay. I can come back with it. That's easy. I'll just be right back. And she goes, no, I'll come with you. So she walks with me. Like you did. I said, that's the menu. It's kind of whatever, but they have really good burritos. They have really good tacos. Whatever you like. And she seemed disappointed.
I need a hot phone.
And then she kind of just left. mumbled something.
Well, I think several different things could go into that. I think mental health could have played a role in that. Mm-hmm. Addiction could have played a role in that, because sometimes your stomach just doesn't feel good. Mm-hmm. So if you walk in and like see all this Mexican food and it makes your stomach turn, and it's like, oh man, I can't eat this, and mm-hmm. just walk out.
Sure.
Because you know, because now that she's not taking you up on that, there's probably potential for shame in there. Like, hey, I just took this guy up on his offer for food, but
okay.
But I can't eat this food, so maybe I can just say something and walk away.
Right.
And then I don't have to have that interpersonal dialogue.
Right.
And allow shame to creep in. Mm-hmm. There's so many different factors.
There's a million things. We don't know.
There's a million things.
If you were in my shoes and she mumbled and walked out, what do you do next? Because I shrugged.
Yeah.
I'll have the asada burrito.
Yeah.
Okay. I shouldn't have chased her down and be like, no.
No, because then you start to step into a role of rescuing. It's not our job to rescue.
Hey.
Yeah, I guess. You're right.
We can't work harder at it than they will.
Right.
You did your part. Hey, you saw her outside all day, and you said, hey, you look like you could use something to eat. Let me buy you something to eat. She says, okay, and then she gets in there and doesn't see anything that she likes and leaves.
Mm-hmm. And she's a grown-up, so she's allowed to make those decisions for herself.
That's true. Yep. That's okay. Okay. still kind of bummed about it, though. I got another scenario where Kelsey and I were downtown, and we had been talking to a homeless couple for about 20 minutes, and we gave them a blanket from my truck, and we were bringing them muffins from our car. We were coming back from a family event, so we had a bunch of food. And while I was going to the car to get muffins, another homeless person who had noticed us talking to this other couple came up and said, hey, do you have food? I'm really hungry. And I said, yeah, do you like muffins? Right away, he said, no. So I said, okay. We only got muffins. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Were they trying to play me for cash?
Possibly.
I don't know.
We don't know.
I don't know. But maybe they just really didn't like muffins.
Maybe they didn't. Who doesn't like muffins? Maybe they didn't. But right away I was angry. Like, come on, man.
Yeah.
You asked me for something, I can give it to you if you're hungry.
Yeah. Well, and I think...
Well, let me tell a story. We used to bum cigarettes the whole time we were on the streets because we were smoking then. And I had somebody
help when you're on. Well,
homeless. I was just a smoker. I mean, it's one of my many addictions at the time.
Yeah.
And someone gave us a whole bag of tobacco, and I was so excited. But I opened the bag, and it was menthol tobacco.
That's not weird.
No, I was so mad. I was like,
because you were really excited.
I was really excited, and I hate menthol cigarettes or tobacco. So it was just like, I mean, I smoked it, but it was miserable.
Oh, you did smoke it.
I hated it.
I thought you were gonna trade it for something.
She,
just because they're homeless doesn't mean they don't have a preference
right.
for things, is all it's pointing out.
Yeah, it's a very good point.
That's funny. Give me both three things to keep in mind for the average person when they interact with people on the streets.
It's not your job to solve all their problems.
Or point out those problems.
Mm-hmm. It's not helpful to do that.
No.
No.
Okay. That makes sense.
Boundaried love. And what I mean by boundaried love is that it's okay to love them and show compassion for them, but you got to be able to keep your boundaries up to protect yourself.
Mm-hmm. It's not easy to love somebody if you're holding resentment for being taken advantage of, and that's on you, not them.
Right.
Because you got to understand that when they are in that place, everything is a hustle. They have to fight for everything. So if it's just like, it's like muscle memory, you know, every time you deal with somebody, you figure out a way to talk to them to try to get the things that you need. Mm-hmm. It's not because they want to totally take advantage of you. It's how they're surviving. Mm-hmm. So you got to have that boundary love. You got to be ready for that, but be able to love and have compassion for them and be authentic.
Mm-hmm. I need to say that again, consistently over and over and over again.
Yes.
That's two. What's the third thing?
Just loving people where they're at without trying to get them to a certain point before you can love them.
Mm-hmm.
And if I don't think if you're able to do that, then it's best just to not interact with people because it just feels gross
mm-hmm.
for people to only love you based on your potential or mm-hmm. based on your future recovery or your future getting it together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't feel good to have it be conditional.
We need to change who we are to be able to love them better rather than expecting them to change to make loving them easier.
Let me ask you one maybe short question. When you guys became homeless together.
Yes.
Did you realize after the fact, like, oh, we are homeless? Or did you say, this is where we're going?
Kevin said it to me and I didn't believe it. He said, you realize if we keep going this direction, we are going to be homeless. And I went, no.
No.
2 months later, we were homeless.
I'm laughing because Kevin is the
but
one that
he's
brought that
been church. Through this before.
Okay. He saw the signs.
I've never used street drugs of this magnitude before.
Okay.
This was my first time using really hard drugs.
Yeah.
And I never wanted to stop.
So you knew all the steps there. You had been there before.
It wasn't his first rodeo.
Okay. And you said no because you thought you could handle it, like maintain your life and do this addiction thing.
I just don't think I care about anything but just using. Yeah. Like, and then once you lose everything, it's really like, okay, well, there's nothing left to lose, so let's just really keep going.
Wow. God, it sounds like it's hard to come back from that.
It is really
it sounds
hard.
Sounds like to it's kind of complicated.
It is super
it requires divine intervention.
Yeah. Over and over and over again.
And then once you do get clean, you know, you have systems that are supposedly in place to help you out. It's the hardest fight of your life.
Right.
You know, it's easier to do what you were doing on the streets than it is to do this. You know, it's easier to hustle on the streets than it is to be a grown up. So,
nah.
when you meet somebody who's in recovery, that's off the streets,
yeah.
You're meeting a warrior. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Let's say thank you to the listeners.
Hey, thanks for listening to Hold Fast Podcast. Thanks for hanging out with Alvin, Danielle, and I, along with Quinn and Fox, who had some choice things to say during this interview.
Quinn and Fox provided all the interstitial music, all the random yelps and squeaks.
Yep. I think next is reaching out to Tom Morello to see if we can get some good funk pop to go with Prophets of Rage.
That'd be nice.
That would be awesome.
That would be nice. Okay. Yep. Thank you, guys.
Thanks.